American who conquered Russia comes home. 23-year-old Van Cliborn arrives in Idlewild after winning an international Tchaikovsky piano competition, the first American ever to do so. Our parents came all the way from Texas to greet their son, who took Moscow by storm with his playing. After a little rest, he's scheduled to make a triumphal concert tour. America's Musician of the Year.
Welcome to Soundboard, the Steinway podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. I'm your producer and host, Ben Finan, director of content at Steinway & Sons. Today I'm talking to you about the legacy of Steinway immortal Van Cliborn and the legacy of classical music in America. At the height of the Cold War in 1958, a young, tall drink of water from Texas loped into the lion's den of Moscow and won the piano prize in the inaugural International Tchaikovsky Competition. He won on Russian concertos, Tchaikovsky No. 1, Rachmaninoff No. 3, in front of a group of largely Russian judges that included Kabalevsky, Kachaturian, Oistrakh, Richter, and Zimbalist. Shostakovich chaired the competition. Reminiscent of rock star performances of a bygone era by Liszt, Paganini, and Paderewski, women at the competition wept and fainted at Van Cliborn's playing. The crowd was on his side. The judges were on his side. Nikita Khrushchev, embracing him after the concert in a great bear hug, was on his side. Looking back, what's striking is not that Van Cliborn won in Russia, but that he won the Russians over.
Van Cliborn, the musical conqueror of Moscow, returns to a hero's welcome in New York. He follows the traditional route of Lindbergh and other men of accomplishment up Broadway from the Battery. The 23-year-old pianist is the first musician ever given this tribute by the city. What is more remarkable, in a way, is the popular outpouring for a musical entertainer who is a long hair without sideburns and doesn't play with a rock and roll beat. An example of the enthusiasm. At City Hall, the tall Texan is honored by Mayor Wagner. For Van Cliborn, a big day which he shares with his mom.
When he returned home, Cliborn was an instant hero. He made the cover of Time, the Texan who conquered Russia. The 23-year-old was given a ticker tape parade in New York City. America had never bestowed such an honor on a classical musician, and never will again. The reason for that is not the low esteem of classical music in our country today, nor the fragmentation of the media, nor the fractured nature of our breathless, cockeyed news cycle, nor the fact that only opera singers reach diva status these days, but rather that the celebration of Van Cliborn as hero on this side of the Atlantic had nothing to do with classical music. America loves a winner, and 6 months after the launch of Sputnik, the country was positively desperate for one. Had Van Cliborn attended Moscow's inaugural blintz-eating contest and polished off more plates of pancakes than the Russians, he may well still have garnered a parade upon his return home, at least in his native Texas, and Time wouldn't have had to change its cover line. Cliborn's artistry was appropriated as a victory in the Cold War. It would presage the moon landing and Rocky IV, capitalism over communism. We won. Let's throw this patriot, this warrior, a parade. God bless America. But revisit the reaction in Moscow. The weeping, the embraces, the adoration. These aren't the reactions of people who have lost. The Russians were moved by the unassuming Americans' considered yet intuitive interpretations of their music. Of Tchaikovsky, the greatest of Russian composers. Of Rachmaninoff's vital and virtuosic third concerto. How many Muscovites, dwelling behind the Iron Curtain, had seen a non-Russian pianist, an American pianist, an American pianist who had learned the great Russian concertos so intimately and played them so beautifully?
Since your triumph of last spring, Van Cliburn, and since your sequence of triumphs in Europe and in this country since that time, I should think you are as well qualified as anyone I can think of to express views on this general subject of international exchange and on the usefulness of competitions in fostering international cultural exchange. You do have some views.
Well, Mr. Fassett, I don't think I could be as eloquent in my conveyance of these views as you are, but I will only try to say that I feel that probably I am not an authority by any means. I'm just a pianist. But I do know because I, like many other performers, have now had the experience of going to Europe and to playing before the representative audiences. And I have formed my own opinions and realize that with the important successes of American artists abroad, and I'm thinking very particularly of the New York Philharmonic and their triumphal tour of South America, I know that we are going to go away from a comparison basis of existing values. And when I say comparison value, I don't mean it in any other sense but the very highest, and not saying how do we measure up against so-and-so country.
There's been a little too much stressing, perhaps, on international competition in the arts rather than international cultural exchange.
You're right.
That is what you're referring to.
Yes, and also, if you want to be falsely patriotic, as sometimes we will maybe fall into the trap in saying it's an American way, well, saying it's an American way is only saying, as any other country can designate their way, it's the way they feel most natural in developing. And it has nothing to do with what anybody else is doing. I feel that that's almost like saying, well, let's keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
Moscow launched Van Cliburn into space, but could not sustain the pianist's burgeoning career, which fell to earth and never recovered. In an obituary written in the Washington Post, Tim Page noted that Cliburn, quote, relinquished his crown while he was still a young man, and his life may be seen as a long study in anticlimax, end quote. In the New York Times, Anthony Tomasini wrote, quote, in the late 1950s, this baby-faced, teetotaling, church-going, wholesome Texan had fit the times, but to young Americans of the late 1960s, he seemed a strained, stiff representative of that demonized establishment, end quote. Van Cliburn shone when the stars aligned in an unscripted moment and was victorious. He didn't possess the temperament or discipline for a concert pianist, and he was no cold warrior. He was not our greatest pianist, but something far nobler, our greatest ambassador for classical music. Through his recordings of Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, Cliburn exposed millions of Americans to classical music, many for the first time. After his victory in Moscow, after the initial rush of patriotism simmered down, Americans grew curious. Who was this Tchaikovsky anyway? As a living legacy, Cliburn's spirit burns bright through the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition, where Steinway & Sons is the official piano. The competition was first held in 1962 in Fort Worth, Texas, and continues to be held there every 4 years. 2025 marked the 17th competition. The winners were gold medalist Steinway artist Aristo Sham, silver medalist Vitaly Starikov, and bronze medalist Evren Ozel. But well before these winners were announced, five Steinway artists from the competition jury, Marie Kodama, Gabriela Montero, Lise de La Salle, Evgeny Sudbin, and jury chair Paul Lewis, shared their perspectives on the competition as well as the audacity of Clyburn's enduring influence. Here is Steinway artist Marie Kodama on the competition.
Van Clyburn is very special competition because they have the freedom to play what they want, and also they have choice of pianos, but amongst three wonderful Steinways, which is such a luxury for young pianists, because usually they don't have this choice, or even we don't have the choice when playing. So I think it is such a great chance for any young pianist to be able to participate in this competition, no matter what is the outcome, because the hall is nice, the pianos are wonderful, and the audience is super nice, very warm and reacting to each competitor. And I'm sure it's not so often that we're getting always the immediate standing ovation after the performance. And I think it's very, very nice.
What are the jurors looking for from the competitors? Steinway artist Lise de La Salle makes a distinction between what she would expect in a concert hall setting and what she expects as a juror because of what is on the line for the winners.
We have three recitals, two of 40 minutes, one of 1 hour, and three concerto, including one Mozart. So that made six time to see them on stage. So there is a time to see how they grow from the first round to the latest round, because some are very steady, some are very like equal with no surprise. It can be good or bad, which is, I think, very important to see, because some are going from their top and kind of crashing, you know, under the pressure. Some, very surprising and in a good way, are making their way the opposite, meaning they were not so convincing at the beginning, and they somehow grew very fast, evolved in the last 3 weeks. And we are like discovering things like, wow, I didn't see that in him or her. So there is this first perspective of how someone grows and tolerate and support and handle the pressure, which is just absolutely huge here. Then there is question to ask yourself, because the responsibility is huge, as I said, because we all know that next week they are thrown literally in the concert business with between 60 and 80 concerts per year for the next 3 years. They're going to have to be ready for that crazy life right away. So we have to take that into consideration too, because some very big talent that is not ready and is still a bit fragile, it can be life-destroying, devastating for his own lifetime, you know?
For Steinway artist Yevgeny Sudbin, there's an ephemeral quality in great pianism that has to do with connection between notes.
Sometimes it's even things like connection between the notes, which I find so important. There is something unseen, and maybe it's this tension between each note, how a phrase works, that just grabs all your attention. Maybe as a pianist, I'm more attuned to picking up on it because I know how hard it is to make these connections. I can't really put it in words. It's just some are great at playing the notes, and it's incredibly inspiring and incredibly, it's just awesome what they can do. And others just manage to somehow, when they play, there's also spontaneity involved, and they kind of take you on a journey with them, and you want to be on that journey throughout for every note. Individuality for spontaneity is very important, because you know, you have some artists who like present a work like a beautiful, you know, painting, but others are actually, you feel you are experiencing with them as they paint it, you know. So it's an interesting distinction, I think. That comes back to, in my view, to, you know, this kind of connection between notes. When people play a piece, they're not playing the notes in an extremely awe-inspiring way. They are actually creating something right there and then on the stage. That's kind of a distinction I would draw between maybe something we hear very rarely and something where you draw drops, but it's maybe less rare, you know, than the other component. I sometimes visualize it as a tension between atoms or something, you know, something like that. the kind of unseen energy between the notes. It's also to do with inner tension as well. Some just have this possessed from inside. And that really something I respond to very immediately, viscerally as well.
Steinway artist Gabriela Montero seeks out the same qualities in the competitors that she strives for in her own playing, poetry. For her, that means pianism with intention.
Poetry, meaning, intention, being a very authentic communicator, someone who digs and searches, someone who lives in the question and not in the statement. And that kind of openness, I think, creates an environment where what is most important is the music and to really always find the meaning in the music and the messaging. So basically, someone who is always searching and has this kind of poetic vein, which again brings us back to maybe a golden era of pianism. Truth could be subjective in some ways. Meaning definitely is a very, very personal quest. But I think it's more about living in the moment and living music and being a performer, not so much as someone who repeats, just reproduces something, but rather someone who is reacting to the world around them, and that informs the music making, and that informs also what they're looking for in the repertoire, you know? So someone who is very much involved in what today's world feels like and is able to also bring that to the repertoire of 100, 200 years ago. I think it applies in everything, in a performance in a concert hall of 100 people or 10,000 people or a competition. Just be yourself and always strive to be the best self that you can be, but just be an honest communicator and an honest messenger of all these messages that have been passed down through time but are still very, very relevant, you know, for us today. Just be an honest artist who's always trying to speak the truth somehow of who you are in that moment. You know, like Stanislavski said, you can only be the artist that you are on a given day. So be that artist.
Jury foreman Paul Lewis sees Van Cliburn's legacy as one of honesty, sincerity, and authenticity.
Great pianism. Honesty of musicianship, someone who's not imposing themselves between the music and the listener. It's someone who's being honest as they can, as they see it, you know, about the composer's intentions and finding a way to communicate that directly to their audience without standing in the way, without saying, look at what I can do, aren't I clever? It's about you and the music. When I hear someone play, I want to understand that person's connection with the music they're playing. And sometimes, if it's not clear what that is, I find that a barrier, you know? But if it's clear in someone's playing why they love the music, why they play the music they play, then that's wonderful. That's what I like to hear.
Today, Steinway Immortal Van Cliburn serves for many Americans as a flashpoint, real or imagined, for such milestones as varied as the rise of the stereo LP, the raising of culture and cultural institutions, a slight rise in temperature to warm the Cold War, and a vaguely rising lump of extra musical pride and patriotism in the throat. But revisiting Cliburn's live performance of Rock 3 at Carnegie Hall on RCA reveals the man and his music making, unfettered by geopolitical projection. Here's a pianist both brash, you can hear how big his hands are, and nimble, playing vibrant phrases that are given room to breathe. In the final movement, there's an expansive moment of transcendent calm played out of time. I try to hold on to it before the brakes are released and Cliburn comes crashing through Rachmaninoff's coda and into a wall of analog applause. It's a performance that secured a legacy of musicianship and goodwill, renewed and rejuvenated every 4 years in Fort Worth, Texas, USA.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. We heard Steinway immortal Van Cliburn performing Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto and Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto, both on RCA Records. We heard excerpts from newsreels from 1958 and from a 1958 Van Cliburn interview with James Fassett. Our intro and outro music is Philip Glass's Mad Rush, performed on a Steinway Model M by me, Ben Finan, Director of Content for Steinway & Sons. Steinway & Sons is the official piano of the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition. Question for the podcast? Message me on Facebook or hit me on the gram at Steinway & Sons. Subscribe to Soundboard on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, or wherever you pod your casts. Thank you for listening.